I'll move approval of the recommendation on student A.
We have a motion by Mr. Ballard and a second by Mrs. Sheffer for the stipulated expulsion on student number A. Is there any discussion? Seeing no one, I'll bring it back to the board for a vote. All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Carries 7-0. Would someone like to make a motion on student B?
I'll move to accept the proposal on student B.
We have a motion by Mrs. Sheffer and a second by Mr. Quesenberry for the stipulated expulsion on student B. Is there any discussion from board members? Seeing none, I'll bring it back to the board. All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Carries 7-0. And then in closed session, the board provided direction to staff regarding the discipline of employee number 300202 in accordance with the rules and regulations of the classified service. Let's move on to a consensus on the order of business. Is there Mr. Millar?
Yes, Mr. Unger. We have a high-priced lawyer that's spinning the dial down there, so I was wondering if we could hear from Mr. Green sooner rather than later.
Okay, so.
And I appreciate it.
So the request is then to move. Are you requesting that we move item number
9.02?
Is it 9.02? Sorry. 9.02 to this point. Is anybody in objection? Mrs. Holmes? Right. Okay, well, the board is we just need to talk about this right now. So we recognize that you're here. Can we?
Is this a long item?
How long do you think the territory transfer is going
to
be?
It'd be up to you, but it shouldn't be too long.
Well, we could do the teaching.
Well, yeah,
I'm just
trying
to expedite.
Okay. Why we could do the we can go ahead. Actually, we need to do minutes, and then if it's okay with you, Kai, could we go ahead and do the Teach Foundation grants and then come back and get to you?
Yes.
Okay, great. Let's do approval on the minutes, please. Would someone like to make a motion on the minutes for October 16th, 2012? Anybody?
Well, I'll move approval of the minutes.
Okay, we have a motion and a second for the approval of the October 16th, 2012 minutes. Is there anybody from the public that would like to address the board on this item? And seeing no one, I'll bring it back to the board. Is there any discussion from board members about the minutes for October 16th? And seeing no one, I'll bring it back for a vote. All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Carries 7-0. Let's move on to the minutes from October 23rd, 2012. Is there anybody from the public that would like to address the board? And seeing no one, I'll bring it back to the board. Is there anybody that would like to make a motion on that?
I'll move approval of the minutes of 10:23.
Okay, we have a motion by Mrs. Roger. Second by Dr. Eisendrath Rogers. Is there any discussion from board members? Seeing none, I'll bring it back for a vote. All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Carries 7-0. And then let's move on to item number 5.02, Teach Foundation Fall Grant Awards. And then we'll get back to these other things. Terry Main.
Good evening. Happy election night to all present. I'm very pleased to be back again for our fall 2012 grant cycle. I'd like to make an announcement that we're donating $12,442 as part of our long-term efforts to support classroom programs. We've got a number of teachers here tonight to tell you about their grants. We'll try to do this pretty quick. I'd first of all like to acknowledge, I don't know if this was in a prior board meeting, but the Shanbron Brom Ching Family Foundation made a $10,000 grant to special education program for professional development. I hope that was acknowledged. And I would also like to acknowledge that TEACH has the support of a number of groups in San Luis Obispo who are granting to our pass-through fund to allow us to support the grant program. We've received grants from Rotary Club of SLO de Tolosa, United Way, the Wells Fargo Bank Ohio Foundation, and Schwab Charitable Fund over the past quarter. So we're very grateful for those organizations to support our grant activities. So without further ado, I'm going to let the teachers who've come tonight tell you about their grants. First of all, we're going to have Jennifer Donnelly speaking on behalf of Carol Olker from Baywood to tell you about their grants. So I'll just get out of the way and let them come up and talk to you.
Hi, good evening. I am Jennifer Donnelly. I'm here on behalf of Carol Olker, who is home ill this evening. But I would like to thank the TEACH Foundation for their
cultural choro this year and spend a day in the life of the Chumash, which is a unit that we study in third grade. It's a field trip we've gone on for many years, but with a lack of funding that we have with budget cuts, we didn't think we would be able to go, but we are so grateful that our third graders will be able to paint their faces like Chumash, see the Chumash houses, even eat Chumash foods at a day and run trail choral. So thank you so much.
Do they get to eat abalone?
Good evening to the board. My name is Tara Clapham from Seal Smith, and I wanted to thank the TEACH grant for providing the opportunity for more of our families to have access to literature. They're helping us to establish a bilingual book library, and this will be fostering literacy at CL Smith School and also honoring the home language of many of our students. So thank you very much.
Hello, my name is Jessica Patton. I'm a fifth grade teacher at CL Smith, and I am here on behalf of myself and my teaching partner, Brittany Andrews, who is our other fifth grade teacher. And we actually are receiving two grants from the TEACH Foundation, so we're very, very thankful for that. We go to Monterey Bay Aquarium every single year, and because of budget cuts, we didn't think our fifth graders would be able to go this year, but fortunately, we are on our way to make it to Monterey because of the TEACH Foundation. We have also received a grant for a library of books to help teach our new writing program this year. So mentor texts that we can use to help teach our writers what is great writing and show them what great writing is. So we're really thankful for the TEACH Foundation. Thank you.
Hello, my name is Tom Weinschenk from San Luis Obispo High School, and I'm so grateful for the TEACH Foundation. We received a $500 grant to take a group of 40 students down to the Getty Villa in Malibu, and I'll be able to give them a private docent tour of the antiquities there and to share such a wonderful, rich collection of Roman and Greek art with them. And then on the way back home, we'll be going and taking a tour of UCSB and their classics department, where one of my students currently is. And so it's just going to be a great day, and I really appreciate the ongoing support from TEACH for all of what they do. Thank you.
Good evening. Jed Brington, San Luis High School. I'd like to thank you on behalf of myself and Tim Fay, who's the metal and welding instructor at our high school, for the grant, the generous grant that you've given both of us. Thank you.
Good evening. I'm Nino Reinecker. I teach guitar at San Luis Obispo High School, and I really want to thank the TEACH Foundation for their support that they give to our students and to our community. The grant that I applied for and got is for the Guitar 3 program, which is the advanced guitar students. These are highly motivated and skilled students, and they are going to be having the opportunity to have Darren Clark, a very renowned musician from our area, come in and give some workshops in which he'll allow them to learn lead guitar in a variety of different styles. They'll get together and play electric guitar, which they don't necessarily normally get do in my classroom because we do acoustic, and play in bands and have four workshops with him. So it's a very exciting opportunity for them. So thank you very much to the TEACH Foundation.
Hi, my my name is Ken Hotelling. I'm one of the sixth grade teachers at Monarch Grove Elementary School, and I want to thank the Teach Foundation for their generous support, a continued support, of sending almost 60 different sixth grade students to the Hearst Castle, where we will participate in a curricular tour up there that specializes in the ancient civilization. So thank you to the Teach Foundation.
Hi, my name is Terry Jacobson from Pacific Beach, and I'm here again, as some of you reminded me, thanks to Teach Foundation, their continued support of our programs. Mine is for enhancing the art experience that allows a guest artist from the community to come on campus and work with the students for about a six-week period. It can be a turnaround moment for our students and provides an opportunity we would otherwise not be able to give to them. So thanks once again.
Hi, I'm Melissa Newman, and I echo her. Our grant is for a mock trial, and without your support, Teach, we wouldn't be able to participate in this awesome, awesome program, and we're looking forward to seeing you, Mr. Millar. Thank you very much.
Good evening. I'm Holly Perez. I teach the special day class, most intensive, at Laguna Middle School. And I'm so thankful that I received a grant for wheelchair accessible transportation to Cal Poly every Friday. It's called Friday Club. We work with the kinesiology class at Cal Poly, and it's in preparation for the special
thank you to the Teach Foundation.
Okay, and there you have it. We gave a total of 22 grants this grant cycle, and we look forward to doing it again in January. Okay. Any questions?
Is there anybody from the board that would like to make any comments? Well, gosh, yeah. Right. I mean, right. Yeah.
Have a good night. Just
for anybody watching on TV, and we appreciate everybody that's here, just a reminder that the Teach Foundation is an endowment, and it's money that goes directly to our classrooms and our students and our teachers, and especially given these tough economic times, especially, you know, which are terrible for schools right now, we really want to encourage everybody to donate as much as you can to the Teach Foundation. If you have any questions, you can get in touch with our office, and we'll put you through to Terry Main. Thank you very much, and thanks again to the Teach Foundation. Let's move on. Let's go over to Kai, and Kai Maloney is the San Luis High School student representative. Kai.
Hi. So we just finished with our homecoming week about 2 weeks ago, and it started off with our Powder Puff game. And then we had lunch activities throughout the week, which really got the students involved. And then we had our annual parade downtown on Friday, and then it culminated with the dance, which went over very well with the students. And then as far as sports, we had four teams qualify for CIF playoffs. Our girls' tennis team had a road game and unfortunately lost in the first round. And then boys' water polo and girls' volleyball both had games today. Water polo played Beverly Hills, and the girls' volleyball team hosted El Segundo. And then our football team came in third place in the Pac-7 League standings. And on Friday, they will travel to Canyon High School in Santa Clarita, and they will be playing that game. Unfortunately, they will have to play that game without starting quarterback Garrett Giovanelli due to a serious knee injury. But hopefully he'll be back in time for baseball season. They're thinking it's an MCL tear, which hopefully he won't need surgery. Our FFA program had their parliamentary procedure competitions, and it's basically the FFA students are judged on their parliamentary procedure in a meeting-based competition. And our novice team won at the state level and then moved on to the national competition in Indianapolis, where they actually came in first place and won nationally, which is pretty big. And this Friday, we will be having a miracle a minute for relief benefits for Hurricane Sandy, where in the second period, we'll be collecting donations from students, and hopefully we'll be able to help out in that area. So thank you.
Great. As always, thanks, Kai. Again, if you want to stay, please, you're welcome to stay and participate in the discussion we had. We understand that you probably need to go home, that you might need to go home for homework, and also because tonight's the election night, you might be interested in that. So thank you. Okay. We'll move on to public comment. Is there anybody from the public that would like to address the board on any item that's not on the agenda? And I see somebody who wants to come up right now. I have three people. Yes, and can you give that to Mrs. Holmes, please? Everybody, we're going to limit it to 3 minutes.
Do you want all of those now, or just?
How many are there?
I think there's four.
Okay, you know what? I'm gonna hold off on public comment then at this point, if it's okay with the board, because we did want to have Mr. Green come and speak with us, and then we'll go to public comment after Mr. Green. So I'm sorry, but I think we'd like to do this now, and I hope you'll understand. Yes, please go ahead and give that to Mrs. Holmes. Ty? Or actually, let's see, who's doing this one? 9.02, that would be Dr. Prater.
I got it.
Okay.
So thank you, Mr. President. And tonight, the item in front of us is the appeal process for appealing the decision of the Commission on District Boundary Adjustments. And what, just a quick summary is that there has been a petitioner, a citizen of Cayucas, who's filed a petition to readjust the boundaries of the Cayucas Elementary School District to become a feeder district for our district as opposed to where it currently goes, which is Coast Unified. There were a series of meetings over the last several months. The hearings were held, and the commission had a vote, and during the vote they denied the petitioner's petition, and the result of that vote was basically to leave the boundaries as they currently are. There has been an appeal of that decision, of that vote, filed by the petitioner. The process of that petition is to go forward to the County Office of Ed, who will forward it to the California Department of Education, and then it will be and have a school district's voice heard when it's time, if we decide to go that far with the department, the State Board of Education. We also have options. Once the appeal is filed, we can continue with it. We can withdraw it. We can meet with Coast Unified, see if we can work out some sort of a negotiated settlement. We have a number of options. All of them are good options. No appeal, no options. So staff's recommendation to the board is that we be given the ability to file the notice to appeal, which is first step, and follow up very quickly with an actual appeal. The board has seen the basic outline of that appeal and the main points in it. Mr. Green is here tonight to answer any legal questions you might have, and then based upon your direction, we'll make our next steps.
Does anybody have any questions? I guess as Russell said about all I would say. So
I guess before I go
but
to the board,
but you only have to pay me, is no.
Before I go
I
to
told
the board,
you all that.
I'm going to go to the public to see if there's anybody from the public that would like to address the board on this item. And seeing no one, I'm going to close the public discussion of this. Don't go away, Mr. Green, and bring it back to the board now. Mr. Millar.
So, Ty, if we appeal, would it be an appeal as to the hearing procedure by the county committee?
Yeah, but the procedure is a little broader than just the procedure, which I keep hearing is one of the things in the procedure is they have make 10 findings. Right. That's referenced in, I think it's 535709. Those findings, that was part of what they didn't make those. And so I think part of the appeal would be that those findings should have been made.
Okay, so it's substantive.
It's a substantive and procedural. It could be, you know, the process is not really that well defined. So it could be that the state board says, well, the procedure wasn't followed, and kick it back to the county committee. It could be that they say, we're just going to decide it ourselves because we have the – my hope would be that they would decide it themselves, that we'd give them enough information to do that. There's another thing that goes along with this. I think you had discussed previously the waiver of section, I think it's 35765.5, which is the section that was apparently taken into closed session at the county committee meeting and was what was a determining factor. Whether I agree with that interpretation or not is one issue. But another issue would be that you have the right to seek a waiver of that from the State Board of Education. I would, you know, that's not on the agenda tonight. I would say, though, that we consider that strongly in conjunction with an appeal, if we do appeal, because that takes the two issues at the same time in front of the State Board of Education. So you don't, what I wouldn't want to see happen is we get to the State Board, we win, we come back, and we just end up with the same interpretation back at the county committee.
And it might be a little premature, but is there any case law on the interpretation of that section and the use of that conjunction?
Not that I found.
A case of first impression, always fun.
Other questions from board members? Okay. Dr. Prater, you're looking for action from the board to approve the filing of the appeal. Is that correct?
That is correct.
Okay. I'm sorry, Mr. Quisenberry.
Just to make it perfectly clear to me, did I hear you correctly that we're going to, if we vote for the appeal tonight, but not necessarily the waiver, or is that going to be linked to that?
I'll come back for the waiver. The waiver wasn't on the agenda tonight, and it kind of came to light as I was putting together the appeal. It became clear to me that that's probably something we have to do, or would be a good idea to do in conjunction. So that's not before you tonight, but I'll be back.
Just to be clear about the waiver, because we did have some confusion at the last meeting, the waiver, as Ty's speaking of it at the moment, is strategic. The actual waiver is a process we're going to have to go through with the board in order to approve its filings, okay? So as we go forward, it's an independent action of the appeal, but it will be joined to the appeal when it gets to the final result. So if I've made that clear as mud, then I'm really happy.
It's also one of the benefits of the district appealing as opposed to the petitioner, because you have the ability to petition for a waiver. I don't think the petitioner does.
Marilyn. Yeah, Marilyn.
Thank you. Mr. Greenman, there's a time frame by which we must act on the appeal. The notice to the placeholder, we've already done.
Right.
And then the actual appeal itself. Is there a time frame on the waiver?
No, the waiver, you can make the request for the waiver any time. The appeal is for a 30-day. We have a 30-day window as an affected school district, which I think runs out Friday. But the waiver itself is a whole entirely separate process, and the county committee didn't really consider a waiver. They just took the statute and interpreted it in a way that they decided didn't make it prudent to go forward.
Yeah. Okay, thank you.
Okay, any other questions from board members? Well, let's bring it back for a motion. And so the motion that Dr. Prater is looking that Dr. Prater and the staff is looking for is approval to file.
Teach school. I stand before you also as a former English teacher at San Luis Obispo High School. I enjoyed 8 years there. Thank you to Rick Robinette, who hired me. And I was able to work with Jim Quisenberry, which was an amazing pleasure. So nice to see you as well. My daughter, Aubrey, is a first grader. My son, Aiden, is a fourth grader at Teach, moving over from Monarch. And we have been very happy with both schools. I have always been a big proponent of this district. Teaching at San Luis Obispo High School enabled me to realize what a powerful program San Luis Coastal offers for our students. And we are very fortunate to live here, and it's one of the reasons my husband and I chose to raise our children here. A previous agenda item noted that you were to look at the programmatic differences between Teach and Bishop's Peak. And my few short months as a parent of a Teach student has been very enlightening. It is nothing short of amazing there. And I cannot tell you how incredibly pleased we are and how excited our son is every morning to go to school. And when you're looking at these programmatic differences, I understand that the reasoning between looking at Teach and Bishop's Peak is because they're on the same campus and they're overcrowded. But I would urge you to do the following. I would urge you to look at the programmatic differences between Teach's 4th through 6th program and all of our elementary schools' 4th through 6th programs. Don't just focus on Bishop's Peak. Look at what we're doing everywhere. Look at the expectations. Not the curriculum, because we have the same curriculum at every school, but what are the expectations and how is the curriculum being implemented? And the different writing programs. Ask yourself what's motivating all of our students. Do I have 1 minute? Okay. I want you to explore, please, other high-performing schools in our county, Ocean View and Shell Beach. And then also, I would urge you to travel outside of our county. We have some very high-performing school districts close by. Oak Park Unified, 2.5 hours away. All of their elementary schools have API scores in the 900s. What are they doing? What is Teach doing? What are our other elementary schools doing? How are we similar? How are we different? Both Bishop's Peak and Teach are at capacity. It makes sense to move Teach off. I urge you to find Teach a permanent home and expand it. This year they had a lottery. We had kids turned away from an incredible program, and that's too bad. And so as we face increasing enrollment, don't put a Band-Aid on things. Don't just shuffle kids around. Find permanent homes. Utilize our unused space at this time. Thank you.
Thank you very much.
I'm sorry. Next speaker would be Nora Henry.
Good evening. This is a new experience for me, so please bear with me if I get a little nervous. My name is Nora Henry, and I'm a parent of children at Monarch Grove Elementary, Los Osos Middle School, and Morro Bay High School. I stand in opposition to the pilot program that has been proposed to transfer the sixth grade students to Los Osos Middle School. I only have my experience as a mother to lean on. My children are children while they can be children. And I think that is very important. Having a child in high school and in middle school, I understand the difference in the social nature of those schools. And I realize that the pilot program would separate the sixth graders somewhat. But at the same time, I realize that when you are looking at a sixth grader going into sixth grade, emotionally they are very different and socially very different than a sixth grader in June, ready to go into junior high school or middle school in this case. My husband and I are very involved parents, and one of the most important things for us is to make sure that our children have experiences in all areas of their lives that are important to them. And to us, one of the most important things is that they remain children while they are children. So thank you.
Thank you very much, Mrs. Henry.
Our next speaker would be Paul Irving.
Good evening, Board. My name is Paul Irving. I am a concerned parent of a fifth grader over at Monarch Grove, and I wanted to share some thoughts that me and my wife had cooked up in regards to the proposed middle school transfer. Okay, if it's not broken, don't fix it. Monarch Grove Elementary sixth grade program is not broken. In fact, we believe that it's working beautifully. While there may be overcrowding at Baywood and Del Mar, this is definitely not the case at Monarch Grove. We've got two excellent sixth grade teachers, more than enough space for sixth grade classrooms, a beautiful campus, a familiar student body, faculty, staff, and routines, more than adequate infrastructure to support our children's education. For sixth grade, Monarch Grove offers, and how secure our children may be, there's no denying that it feels different to be surrounded by kids on an elementary school playground than it feels to walk down crowded halls and overhear kids talking about who got high before the school dance and who's having sex with whom. And if our 10- and 11-year-old children become subjected to bullying by the 7th and 8th graders at Los Osos Middle School, it will have been a life-altering mistake that we can't afford to make. Even if the 6th graders are isolated in portables on the edge of campus, will they walk the halls to enrichment classes? Will they sit alongside 8th graders for advanced math and English classes? And even the proposed 3-minute after-school release time buffer, won't our children still all be walking home together regardless or riding the bus home together with older kids? Further, the proposed plan is simply a proposal that has not been tested. If there's no good reason to move the Monarch Grove 6th grade to Los Osos Middle School, why subject our children to an experiment? The previous attempt at Los Osos Middle School 6th grade was not successful. While the variables may be different this time, there's still no positive track record or evidence that it will work. Elementary school in 6th grade offers our children a chance to experience...
Can you wrap it up, please?
15 seconds.
Go for it, but 15 seconds only.
Elementary school sixth grade offers our children a chance to experience the culmination of their elementary school experience as mentors, big buddies, peace patrol, and one more year to feel like kids.
Well, Los Osos Middle School may be a great school. We believe sixth grade is just too early. We're happy with Monarch Grove and its history of excellent sixth grade programs. We see no need to move our sixth graders to the middle school. And at this time, we respectfully and strongly oppose
Thank you very much.
This proposal.
Thank you.
Our last speaker would be Carla Savage Sachs.
You have a hyphenated name. It's easy to smush it all together. So, hi. This is also new for me, so bear with me, and I'm sure I'll just get dinged out after I've said two things. So, I'm also a mom at Monarch Grove Elementary School. My daughter is in second grade, and my son is in fourth grade. And so, there are a lot of us here, and what we've been hearing as this proposal was going out, or these thoughts of it, is like, well, the board doesn't know how you feel. So we're just trying to get as many people to come up and let you know how we feel. I'm sure the people that feel differently than we do, but we want you to know there's plenty of opposition, as you might say the word to be, at our school. And so some of what we've been meeting weekly, actually, in my house and other people's houses, and we've gone on tours. Tomorrow's another tour that we're going on at 10 a.m. and met with Kyle and kind of checking things out, really want to be informed. But as we've been sitting in these meetings and as we've been looking at the research on, you know, middle school in general and how easily that fails us, whether it's 6 through 8 or 7 through 9. But so this problem now that's going on in the districts does seem like the solution, in my opinion, feels like a Band-Aid on a really more systemic problem. So I'd love to see more thought going into, you know, and more, I just don't really, the solution doesn't seem like a good one for many reasons, not just for the Monarch Grove affecting us negatively. I agree with that, that we do have this cohesive, lovely, nurturing environment, and we're a strong group. And so I could see where it benefits Loams. That's great. Let's bring youth there. And there's only two grades there anyway. When I went on the tour, I have to say, and I am passionate, that was this desolate wasteland. Kyle's awesome, open to discussion and listening, and what a nice guy. But like, whoa, Kyle, you need a paint job. Like, I'm ready to come there, and I will, but I don't want to in sixth grade. Yeah, we'll do that in seventh grade. But adolescence is a wasteland anyway. I mean, it doesn't have to be, but it often is. It's a no man's land, and then you're going to go there. And so, granted, I think there does need to be maybe some more years there, but maybe we'll look at like a 5 through K. Balance out so we're not just throwing sixth graders over there. Not just that, if you are going to move us over there, move me over there in sixth grade, you've got to have play as a part of your thing. There's no playground there. There's no, how's the garden going? There's Mr. Chestnut's helping out in the greenhouse, but that's about it. There's no... We need to lift up the spirits there. If we're going to bring our sixth graders there, you need to create a familial environment. I don't need an iPad. In fact, most of us in Los Osos are trying, not most, I'm speaking for myself, but we want to keep that limited, all the technology. So the sort of like, well, we'll give you, and pardon me for just saying it this way, but we'll give you some technology in this great program, but we often see those programs, they probably take a while to implement, and we don't know that all the funding is going to happen for that. And I think most of us are more concerned about how are you going to balance the needs of young children and adolescents at the same school. Of course, it does go on all around, but how is Loams going to do that? Right now, Loams has a lot more, I think, it needs to be doing to help itself out before, or that it should welcome us well. So, again, we are here tonight to let you know that there is plenty of opposition to that, but there's also plenty of openness to dialogue about how can we solve this more systemic problem. Yep. Thanks.
Great. Thank you very much. Is there anybody else that would like to address the board on any item not currently on the agenda? Okay, I'm going to close public comment. We'll move on to correspondence. The board received a number of pieces of correspondence. We received a letter from Kim and Nathan Love regarding Teach Elementary School, Van McCarty regarding, and we also got a letter up here from Van McCarty regarding Teach.
Even though we are a district, as we've heard in public comment, that is exceptional. This is truly an exceptional story to be heard. Hawthorne Elementary, I'm sure Mr. Collins will tell you, faces the most challenges probably in our district in terms of economic disadvantaged student populations. They are a powerful neighborhood school that has done exceptional things, and they deserve something. And tonight is their opportunity to tell you their story about how they've met all their AYP targets, our only Title I school to do so. It's an amazing story. Mr. Collins.
First of all, I'd like to just say thank you for allowing us to be here tonight. We're excited to share a little bit about our story. I'm going to start off with just kind of who we are. And again, as Dr. Prater mentioned, our demographics. You can see our free and reduced counts, our English learners, families in transition, special education. Our numbers are probably the highest in the entire district. And also with our subgroups, our English learners, going back to 08-09, you can see we've had, you know, exceptional growth in all of these areas. And, you know, looking at these numbers, you're probably thinking, wow, these numbers of these at-risk populations are going up. You know, Hawthorne's probably here to tell us, you know, wow, here's a good excuse of why our test scores are kind of mediocre. But I'm here tonight to tell you that we are doing exceedingly well. You can see going back to 2009 and looking at the four-year growth, this isn't just a one-shot growth spurt for us. This has been systematic for the last 4 years. And one of the things that I think is kind of exciting as you look at the different numbers, you know, we're always trying to talk about closing the achievement gap. And if you look at the 779 for our Hispanic students, and then just go look at our overall API just 4 years ago, we have surpassed that. And, you know, we're just really excited about what we're seeing. You know, we are making huge gains. And again, as Dr. Prater said, 21 out of 21 on the API. But what we really like to look at is the API, okay, where you can see that our far below basic students and our below basic students, you can see that with this graph that those numbers are getting smaller and smaller, and the proficient and advanced students are getting larger and larger. And we just love to see those lower band kids moving up. And we just kind of wanted to tell you our story, kind of how are they making this happen. And so I've invited a couple of my teachers to come up here and kind of just share the good news. So first is Brooke McMillan. She's a kindergarten teacher, and she's going to talk about preschool, kindergarten, and first grade.
Good evening. My name is Brooke McMillan. As you said, I teach kindergarten, reading recovery, and I've done LLI, and I've done Title I in fifth grade. So first, I'd like to talk about reading recovery. Last year, 18 of our 50 first graders received reading recovery. And because our school has high numbers of EL students, resource students, and free and reduced lunch students, you would expect our success with reading recovery to be limited, but this is not the case. As you can see, the percentage of students who successfully discontinued from reading recovery has increased. This means that they caught up to their peers in reading and writing. The red area shows the EL students who received reading recovery, and the blue area shows the English-speaking students. So many of our reading recovery students are still discontinuing even though they're EL students. And we believe this increase of success with reading recovery is a result of great reading recovery teachers, collaboration between these teachers and the classroom teachers, and also within the last 2 years, our kindergarten teachers have shifted the way they teach so that kindergarten is very much an academic-based year. Next, I'd like to talk about level literacy intervention, LLI. In 2010, we implemented LLI in addition to reading recovery. Because of our demographics, we have many students who need reading recovery, but not enough teachers to help all of them. Most of our reading recovery students are ELs, so they need even more support after they receive reading recovery, and LLI is perfect for that. Of our 50 first graders, 40% received reading recovery and 12% received LLI, so about half of our first graders are receiving individual or small group literacy intervention. And that's amazing that half of them are getting that double dip. In addition to this, we also had groups of LLI in second and third grade. And this year, we've already started LLI in first grade, and we're planning to have it in kindergarten through third prepared students. This fall, we experienced the results of their hard work, and it was amazing. These kids came to kindergarten ready to learn. They knew what school is all about. They could sit crisscross applesauce, raise their hand, hold a pencil, write their name, and write stories. As you can see on the left, that's a student that did not attend preschool. And on the right is a writing sample by a student who attended Hawthorne Preschool. Research shows that students who attend preschool have a stronger foundation of academic skills, and they are more likely to graduate from high school.
We would like to thank you for implementing preschools in our district. And all the kids are seeing, or we have seen, all the teachers are seeing great improvement with all the kids. Next is Julie Dye.
I'm going to continue to tell you about our intervention in grades 2nd through 6th. So in grades 2 through 6, each teacher has one intervention time so that core subjects are not interrupted. Intervention groups are reassessed every 3 to 4 weeks, and students are placed according to greatest need. Interventions include guided reading, leveled literacy intervention, English language intervention, Ramp It Up, and Skill Builders. During guided reading, students receive small group reading instruction at their reading level. They are instructed by their classroom teacher and trained classroom aides. LLI is more intensive and allows our struggling readers to receive instruction from credentialed teachers in groups of 3 to 4. Our EL specialist focuses on students who need support learning English. She targets those who are at a level 1 or 2. Ramp It Up is strategic math and language arts instruction by our intervention teacher. She uses data from our diagnostic and post-tests to identify those students needing extra support. Skill Builders is taught by a trained instructional aide and takes place after school. It is designed to give those students support that are pulled out for another intervention during the day, such as EL. Just a little history about how we decided to create diagnostic and post-tests. About 2 years ago, we identified schools that had similar demographics to ours and were performing well. We selected 2 schools, Baldwin Academy in La Puente and Fairgrove Elementary in Oceano, and sent teams to visit them. After those visits, grades 2 through 6 met in June 2011 to write math pacing guides and diagnostic and post-tests. The pacing guides ensure that we cover the entire curriculum. The diagnostic and post-tests inform the teacher's instruction. We were so pleased with the results of the math tests that this year we are introducing diagnostic and post-tests for English language arts. By using data from the post-test of each math unit, the intervention teacher and classroom teacher can easily identify those students needing strategic support. Those students then attend either Ramp It Up or Skill Builders. Students who attend these programs show significant growth, as demonstrated in the graphs I'm going to show you. This graph shows the significant growth made by 5th grade students on intervention test 2. As you can see, the green bar shows their score after the classroom post-test, and the yellow bar shows their score after receiving Ramp It Up. Of course, we were very pleased with the results. The same holds true for Skill Builders. Those students also showed significant growth, as demonstrated by this graph. Again, we were very pleased. Now I'd like to introduce Mark Riley.
Thank you, Julie. Okay, I want to talk about the collaboration opportunities that the grade level teachers have. What you're seeing here are 2 response matrix from our intervention tests from 5th grade. Teacher 1's class and teachers 2 class. And these are the diagnostic tests. And you can see that the green squares are correct answers. The red squares are incorrect answers. And so we meet at TCT to compare our test, our diagnostic test, and we can make decisions about where to spend our time in instruction. We can concentrate more on patterns we see, and each of the questions across the top, they're numbered 1 through 14 there, represent different standards. And then we can take a look and say, well, okay, let's spend most of our time on these 3 or 4, and we can just touch on the others. So this really helps inform what we do. And I'd like to repeat what Julie said. There's no grade issued to any of these students based on these tests whatsoever. It doesn't impact their classroom grade or a grade in a subject. These are purely small little dipsticks to how can we decide whether this really worked for us or not? What we're able to do is, after the fact, we were able to go back and drill down on individual students. So if we look at on the left where the blue is, the blue bars, it says cluster scores. And those are for scores for algebra and functions. Those are out of the 08, 09, and 10-11 STAR test. And so this individual student, who was a sixth grader last year, was performing poorly on that set of that cluster of standards, algebra and functions. And then our post-test, you see there on the right, picked up the same thing. So that student did go to intervention, and sure enough, after the STAR test, those 40 and 45% scores on algebra and functions went up almost to 80%. And the STAR test results, you'll see at the bottom, that student went from below basic to proficient. So we're able to go and test and see if our strategies are working or not. So not only can we drill down to, individual students, but we started to discover that we can step back and take a broader look at it. And using Data Director, we discovered, for example, a trend that our school-wide, our students are having trouble with measurement and geometry. Could be because that standard is tested with application problems that are vocabulary rich. And so we can now have some conversations about how to address that problem throughout the whole school. And this is because we're taking the time not just to collect this data, but to act on it, to make a plan and act on it right away. So that's what we've done so far. Mr. Collins.
So just to wrap it up, you know, it really does take a village. At Hawthorne, in order to get those outstanding results that we're now seeing, not only do we have fantastically skilled teachers that utilize best practices on a daily basis, but we have sought out and have created a myriad of programs and interventions for our students. We also are so blessed with lots of wonderful supporters at Hawthorne, and we feel like they have become part of our Hawthorne family. Groups like Friends of the Library that read one-on-one with over 100 students every week, the Masons, Altrusa Club, parents and grandparents, Cal Poly students and professors helping with our science fair and working in classrooms, San Luis High School students, the City of SLO, Rideshare, you know, and our wonderful ELAC and PTA families are all part of the pulse, all part of our story. And to the board members, your investment in the district initiatives have really had a direct impact on the success of our students. You've seen the numbers tonight. We have used our resources wisely and strategically, and we will continue to do so by constantly evaluating and honing our instruction and our instructional programs. As you know, we are already feeling the impact from the state cuts this year. We have had reductions in staff and programs and are doing our very best to compensate. Without the passing of Prop 30, cuts to the district could be even more devastating. But as Jamie Vollmer said, schools need to have consistent and sustainable resources because they cannot do it alone. Hawthorne is unique and very different from the other schools in our district. Just like us, Hawthorne School, we differentiate for different students, and we hope that you can differentiate between our individual school needs. With that support, we feel we can continue to show remarkable results. You have done a fantastic job in supporting us in the past, and we thank you for that. And we hope and pray that in the future, you'll be able to support us continuously. We are Hawthorne School, where all really does mean all. And I just want to thank you.
Are there comments?
Chris, could we ask how many of the folks in the audience are staff and faculty?
If you could stand up and be recognized, please.
Beautiful. That's a big reason for your success right there.
Comments or questions from board members? Walter.
Oh, I didn't realize this is still on, but since you asked me, I feel great. I mean, it is so refreshing and inspiring to see the results and to see data
and proving that it's valuable even on the CST. And the other thing is just how powerful neighborhood schools can be with substantial community support. So thank you for the presentation.
Marilyn.
I don't know what to say, really. I know Mr. Collins is aware of how strongly I feel about Hawthorne School and how proud I am of all of you, the job that you've done with a school that has so many obstacles to overcome. The fact that the staff is pulled together and what they've done with kids is really, it's very touching, and it makes me proud to be here and proud of all of you. I mean, this is the kind of success that moves us forward and keeps us going. So I take my hat off to all of you. Thank you so much.
Mark.
Thank you, Mr. Unger. I just want to tell you how great it feels. Kurt knows I consider Hawthorne my home school. Where the neighborhood where I had my home, and all the accolades that we can say here. But there's one part that I heard that really touched me, and that's that you guys wrote the exams, and you're willing to look at them, and you're literally to look at yourselves and say, this part's not working, and get together and get it done. And I really appreciate that. I really appreciate it on behalf of the children.
Great. And I'll just close by saying, I look at your tie, Mr. Collins, and I see the Eagles, which I believe is the school symbol and animal. And actually, I would suggest, you know, we know that eagles soar high, but I think for Hawthorne, almost a better symbol would be the phoenix. Because if you think about it, back in, 2001, there was 180 students at Hawthorne. It was probably the smallest physical space in the district. And we were real concerned about the ability of the school to stay open. And, in fact, there were discussions about whether or not we should look at a school closure when we were closing other schools. And, in fact, the decision was made not to close Hawthorne. There was a lot of community support for it. And I think that you guys have absolutely done phenomenal things there. You look at the population you've got. You went from 180 to over 300, 350 students, close to that. Your community support, not only from organizations, but from within your local education community. And then as an educator myself, when I hear what you guys are doing as teachers, you're doing all the things that we read about, that we hear about, that are the hallmarks of excellent teaching and excellent schools. And as Mr. Quisenberry pointed out, that starts with the teacher conversations and your guys' ability to talk to each other about professional issues and collaborate. So continue what you're doing, and thank you for everything for students. Great. Yep. Yeah.
Okay. Go get some rest.
Yes, indeed. Let's move. And I just wanted to say, Dr. Eisendrath Rogers was not leaving because she didn't want to hear what you had to say, but her son was being honored this evening at an FFA award, at an FFA banquet, I believe.
Thank you.
And so We're glad she's back. Let's move on to item number 7.03, an update on the grade pilot program at Los Osos Middle School.
Thank you, President Unger. I wanted to give the board a quick update on how the planning and meetings held on the proposed realignment of the sixth grade at the coast into a science, technology, engineering, arts, and mathematics program at Los Osos Middle School, and just how that is all going at this point. So a summary of what has been done thus far. Is the board ready? Okay. All right, good. I just wanted to make sure. I met with each faculty of the affected schools, Baywood, Del Mar, Monarch Grove, and Los Osos Middle School, between September 17th and the 26th to explain the issues and the proposal. Dr. Pruitt has held a series of community forums to garner parent feedback on the concept. So he had one on October 15th at Del Mar, October 17th at Baywood, the 18th at Monarch Grove, the 29th at Los Osos Middle School. He will be attending the Baywood PTA at their request on November 14th. He has made invitations to families and people to visit the campus. Those meetings have been attended by board members, and they've had very good representation and very good dialogue. We will get a full report on some of the issues raised, what can be addressed, what still needs to be resolved. And it would be unfair to kind of characterize those meetings, but I would say that an overall, Dr. Pruitt and Assistant Principal Carl Bloom toured Lucia Mars Digital High School and gathered ideas about technology support and one-on-one student device issues. Mr. Pinkerton got to be principal for a day at Los Osos Middle School, so they could go attend that. On November 20th, you will be provided a full report on the sixth grade proposal as a discussion item. Our staff and the Los Osos Middle School staff will take your input, and if requested, we'll bring back a request to formalize a change at the December 11th meeting. We're looking at making a decision with the board's, after this discussion on November 20th by the 11th so that we can put in place whatever direction it is that we need to go in. The work that Dr. Pruitt and the Los Osos Middle School team has done is really impressive and has been characterized, I think, by a very high degree of outreach. And I can answer any questions, but look forward to the November 20th meeting to kind of bring a more detailed report on where they are so far.
So is this some kind of mad experiment to have 6th, 7th, 8th middle school that's never been tried in public education before?
Well, about two-thirds of the nation have 6th, 7th, 8th grade middle schools, so it's certainly been tried.
Okay. Other questions from board members at this time? Mr. Quisenberry, and then followed by Dr. Eisendrath-Rogers.
Mrs. Rogers and I had the opportunity to see the middle school teachers making some initial plans, some tentative plans for the possibility of the sixth grade to be there, and I was very impressed with their concern for the students, with their creative ideas for developing a schedule that's compatible with them and that a curriculum that would be interesting and exciting for the sixth graders. I was very impressed with that particular meeting. And I was also impressed and very aware of the parents' concerns as they shared them at the middle school and at Monarch Grove.
Great, thanks. Catherine, did you?
Mr. Robinette, I just wanted to ask you about the question that you framed, what you see as the overarching concern that parents have regarding the appropriateness and, there was another word you used,
The safety.
The safety,
I mean,
yes.
I think there's many issues that have been raised at these forums, but I think that's kind of an overarching concern that we hear.
And at the Los Osos Middle School forum, I was able to attend the gentleman I know who spoke tonight that I didn't get to hear, but I think I probably heard some of the same points that he made there. And I assume those are some of the ones you're also hearing about. So I'm wondering, at our 22nd meeting, is there an opportunity for us to identify someone in the community? I understand the teachers have weighed in on the appropriateness of this, but in terms of developmentally, is there someone that we could have speak to us as a board and also to the public and to the parents about how we make that adjustment, how we make that determination? I'd just like to find an outside expert to bring in or someone from our own staff, but to speak to that exact overarching question that you raised so we can...
Of the appropriateness of sixth graders at a middle school setting?
That, as you put it, the safety issue and the developmental issue. Right. If that's the crux of the matter, I'd like to be able to address that fully at our next meeting. Thank you.
Okay. So we look forward to hearing more at our next meeting on November 20th. We'll go on then to item number 8, which is a public hearing, item number 8.01, proposed 2012
2015 agreement with the California School Employees Association, that's CSEA. Mr. Pinkerton.
We've come to an agreement with the CSEA bargaining group for a three-year agreement based on some contract language changes, so nothing about salary in this agreement, and you'll actually be voting on that later tonight in the action consent agenda.
Okay, thank you very much. This is a public hearing for the proposed 2012-2015 agreement with California School Employees Association, CSEA. I'm going to open this public hearing. Is there anybody from the public that would like to address the board on this item? Seeing no one, I'm going to close the public hearing. Thank you very much. Let's move on to item number 9. This would be item number 9.01, reappointment of personnel commissioner. And Mr. Pinkerton, you're back up at it.
Yeah, so we are very fortunate that Mr. Kent Taylor has decided to take on another term as a personnel commissioner. He has been with us since March of 2007. For the 2 years, that year and a half that I've been here, he has actually been kind of the president of our personnel commission, our leader, and he does an outstanding job of leading the commission and the meetings. And so we were very excited that he wanted to stay on board. And so it is definitely our. And so what we are currently going through a compliance review check through the state. And part of that for me, as I am in charge of the uniform complaint procedures aspect of the compliance monitoring by the CDE, and so in going through that document, I realized that they've made some changes to some of the wording, and I think most of it reflects kind of the new bullying laws that have come into place in July. And so before we have those compliance issues come up, I would like to bring this to the board to hopefully change the policy. And basically, the only change that you'll see in the policy itself is, in the past, it just said discrimination. And so now the recommendation is that it says discrimination, harassment, intimidation, or bullying. So where that was strictly discrimination in the past, now it's changed to reflect all four of those different aspects. And so that's really the only change that's before you, is just making those, wherever it said discrimination, adding those other three.
Okay. I'll take it to the public for public comment. Is there anybody from the public that would like to speak on this item? And seeing no one, I'll bring it back to the board for board discussion. Mr. Quisenberry?
Mine's more just a question. So the requirement for the annual notice, could you give us an example of where that usually appears?
So this board policy is actually attached to all of our uniform complaint procedure forms mm-hmm. that are at all the school sites. So that's one where people would see that. And then each year, annually, the newspaper that goes out to all of the students and parents, it includes all of the policies that, you know, including this, this policy itself is inside that, you know, that document that goes out. It's also on our website. I believe it goes out to the private schools in the area. It goes out to Bellevue, Santa Fe. So kind of a far-reaching document.
Thank you very much.
Sure.
Okay, Mr. Buckman.
Yeah, Mr. Pinkerton, I have one question, and as I was reading this, I noticed that there was a slight changing in the wording. I'm glad to see that this is here. This is a major focus of the assembly last year. So in the first section, where we get down to the district shall investigate complaints alleging failure to comply with such laws, but not limited to, it threw me a little bit, and I'm thinking the word including but not limited to, or going back to what was the original wording, bullying and or, so it would say such laws and or. And I'm just, it just didn't read right to me
yeah.
it was.
But so, to be honest with you, I just pulled this right off of the CDE website.
Yeah.
So the compliance monitoring, that's the exact wording that they had. So, but.
So it's fine.
It could be including.
Yes.
Okay.
I'll send it up to CDE.
Perfect.
Okay, so the recommendation, Mrs. Holmes.
Sure.
Are you fixing that right now? Okay. So it would read, in the district shall investigate complaints alleging failure to comply with such laws, including but not limited to? Okay.
Okay.
So that's a recommended change. Is there any other discussion? Okay. Would someone like to make a motion?
I'd like to make that motion, please.
Okay, and that's including?
Including that, please.
Okay, so we have a motion. Do we have a second?
I'll second.
Seconded by Mr. Quisenberry. Is there any further discussion from board members? Seeing none, I'll bring it back to the board for a vote. All in favor? Aye. Opposed? Carries 7-0. Let's move on to our action consent agenda. As always, let me know if you'd like something pulled. Item 10.01, approval of certificated and classified personnel items. 10.02, approval of the 2012-2015 agreement with California School Employees Association. 10.03, acceptance of donations. 10.04, approval of furniture and equipment requests. 10.05, approval of purchase orders. 10.06, approval of warrants and payroll. Would someone like to make a... is there anybody from the public that would like to address us on that? And seeing none, I'll ask for a motion.
I'll move that we accept the action consent agenda items 10.01 through and including 10.06.
Okay. We have a motion. Would someone like to make a second?
I'll second it.
Mr. Quisenberry seconds that. Any further discussion from the board? Seeing none, I'll bring it back for vote. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Carries 7-0. Let's move on to item number 11.02, advanced agenda.
Thank you very much, Mr. Mayor. First of all, I'd like to thank the staff for answering the questions on the core curriculum, and it was very helpful, and I appreciate that. Tonight, I'd like to... It keeps interesting me that Del Mar and Hawthorne School have given 50 years of service to this community, each of them. And I would like to see them quite impressed by the number of high school students that have been working during this election, working in offices, making phone calls, and walking neighborhoods. And I think it's really impressive that our high school students are getting that involved in the political process at that age.
Okay, anybody else? I just want to say I was able to go to the Cal Poly Education Scholarship Dinner Friday night, and it was quite a great dinner. There were a lot of people there. They raised quite a bit of money, I'm thinking. Probably never enough for scholarships for education majors, kind of mini-grants. And it was really nice to hear from the folks, the students there that had received them. I think Mark and I went to the Del Mar Carnival, and I want to just thank the district and CISC, that's our self-insurance, for the flu shots and for offering those to all our school community. And I think that's it. We'll stand adjourned until November 20th. Thank you.
Thank you.